Welcome to the Recovering from Religion podcast. We are a vibrant international community for those who have questions or doubts about their faith. I'm your host, Tim Reimel, along with my co-host, Bill Prickett.
Hey, Tim, how's it going?
It's going fantastic, Bill. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Sorry. You started right as I was in the middle of giggling. So.
Yeah, I figured you're watching an episode of Golden Girls.
That's exactly not what I'm doing.
Well, I was wrong.
Yeah. So how's it going over in your part of the world?
It's hot. It's summertime.
Oh, here too. It's miserable hot.
Well, that was riveting. Should we start something else?
Okay. I mean, we've discussed the weather. What else would you like to talk about? I have a topic. I'll raise my hand. Teacher, I have a topic.
All right. Go ahead.
Let's talk about our guest today is a fascinating woman, and she grew up in the culture of Bob Jones University. And I know that we are talking about doing kind of a periodic series on Christian schools, Bible colleges, fundamental training institutes, those kinds of things. And so this will be our first foray into that. And she has a riveting story. But in researching Bob Jones University, it was just so fascinating to me, the whole culture there.
It is fascinating. And you and I both went to Bible school, and I went to a Christian Bible school, the non-denominational Christian denomination. And it was, I would say, liberal, mm-hmm. Certainly compared to Bob Jones University, but coming out of the Assemblies of God, or still being in the Assemblies of God at the time, it was pretty open. Mm-hmm. And I dressed the part.
Well, I went to a Southern Baptist sponsored college. It was a university, so it had liberal arts. And this was long before the fundamentalist takeover of the Southern Baptist Convention. So we got a pretty good balanced education of all the arts. And then in my religion classes, we got, looking at scholarly aspects of the Bible. And there were no dress codes. And as I looked at Bob Jones, and I actually was able to find and download a student handbook and a current student handbook from Bob Jones. And I look at what they require and what I had in college. And I was in the 70s, so it's still pretty conservative times. But I'm just stunned at the level of rigidity in that place.
Right. So you sent that to me, and I was reading through that this morning. Right. So daily chapel is required. Attendance as a local church is required. No drinking, no drugs. I'm in. Okay, that's fine. Physical contact on and off campus. Physical contact between unmarried men and women is not allowed. I'm assuming that means hugs.
It says physical contact. So I'm assuming just like you see on TV shows when the lawyer goes in to talk to the prisoner, somebody yells, "No touching." I guess somebody is around policing it. If a male or female gets too close, somebody's going to yell, "No touching."
I'm sure it's probably burned in their brains. So the music that's considered rock, pop, country, jazz, electronic, techno, rap, hip hop, or the fusion of any of these genres is excluded from performance, personal listening on and off campus, or use in student organizations, societies, student productions, outreach ministries, or social media. Also, any music in which Christian lyrics or biblical texts are set to music, which is in whole or in part derived from any of these genres or their subgenres.
So you cannot sing Amazing Grace to a rap song, to a rap melody.
Gospel is derived from jazz.
Exactly. And blues. So
and country. There was country gospel. I grew up on that.
Yeah. And again, as we've talked about in other episodes, I came into the Christian faith during the Jesus movement. So we were just then beginning what's now known as contemporary Christian music. So I remember having some people kind of wary of us because we were singing to guitars and those kinds of things in our youth groups. in our home groups and things. So, but yeah, they still have that.
I hate guitar music. I'll just say it. I hate those little, the acoustic guitars. It just kills me.
Okay. Please address all comments to Tim at.
No, if you play the acoustic guitar, more power to you. I just don't want to hear church music from it.
I understand. I do not agree, but I understand. The other thing, in addition to music, students are not allowed to attend movies of any kind in a public theater during the semester that they are enrolled. So they cannot go to any movies regardless of the rating. So God is not dead. You don't get to see the movie God is not dead, which is fine because it's a horrible movie.
And address all comments to Bill Prickett.
It's honestly not as bad as God Is Not Dead 2, because they had.
Did you see them?
I did research on them. I didn't see them. I saw enough excerpts from them. I wrote a blog article about the second one. I just find it interesting that apparently we didn't believe them after the first one came out, so they had to convince us again, God's really not dead. And now there's a God Is Not Dead 3, so apparently we're just not listening that God is not dead, so they have to keep hammering at us.
Well, you know, I mean, to be honest, it's pretty unbelievable.
In the handbook, one of the things that I read that I thought was most fascinating, because as soon as I read it, you came to my mind, as far as science classes, this is directly from the handbook. At BJU, you'll take challenging science courses that build a firm foundation in science and prepare you to teach. All courses are taught from a literal six-day creation perspective.
Yep, that's the foundation of a solid science program.
That's right. And it's no wonder why we're arguing about climate change.
Right, yes.
And obviously, with as rigid as they are about movies, music, they're even more so about gender nonconformity, sexual orientations, any of gender identity, anything like that is just absolutely, they are very clear that God made two genders. God made one man, one woman for marriage. It's very, very clear on that. But I think the history of Bob Jones is so tied to, and many people consider it, the birthplace of fundamentalism.
Yes, there is a very interesting history with that. So I picked it up in my own research, was where they were fighting to keep the schools segregated, which really was what united the Christian right to begin with and how they got involved with politics.
Yes.
But they go way back, and they were separating themselves from the rest of the Christian community and really the rest of America at that, you know, at that point. And this has remained mostly relegated to the South, even to this day. And that's why you see, when you look at the states of, you know, who has the highest abortion rates, who has the highest teen pregnancy rates, that's based on this biblical idea of abstinence and lack of education and racism and segregation. All of that is a result of what happened or has been happening since the 1800s.
Yeah. I mean, when there was a fight to segregate Bob Jones, we're talking the 80s. George W. Bush spoke at Bob Jones, and John McCain kind of blasted him for speaking at a segregated school. So then all of a sudden, quickly, the policy changed. But it's changed incrementally.
Right.
They would allow black marriage students. They would allow black students to date one another. So it's been a very, very slow incremental change. But the racism, the inherent racism in Bob Jones, was one of the things that triggered the moral majority movement, as there was this push to desegregate the school. It rallied, but they couldn't come out and say, we want to coalesce around racism. So they came up with a better, what they felt like was a more palatable and marketable concept to rally fundamentalists. And that was abortion.
Yes. And it stuck.
And it still is to this day. Before that, abortion was rarely talked about in conservative evangelical communities.
They didn't care.
And now it has become the touch point It is the trophy by which you measure how good of a Christian you are.
Right. And racism has remained strong.
Yes.
It just took a backseat.
Yeah, it took a backseat. And so we rally around this. But at the core of it was the idea of, let's keep this school segregated. We don't want people to force us to integrate. And so there's been that ongoing challenge that kind of Bob Jones being at the center of it. And it's been around since the 20s. So it has a history. It is kind of the underbelly. It's the things that they don't want to talk about. And as you mentioned earlier, because there is this abstinence only, there is no education. There's no reason to educate people about sexual activity, sexual behavior, sexual abuse, when you just say, just don't have sex. That's all you need to know. And everything else is not talked about. And so you have these things going on campus that people do not want to talk about. And Aaron is one of those people who stood up and said, no, I'm going to talk about it.
Right. And they with these types of requirements in the student handbook is that it just continues to push behavior underground. So whether it is acceptable behavior, quote unquote, or it's behavior as what Aaron is going to be talking about today, it pushes it underground. So we can't talk about it because we have to keep up this idea that what we believe and teach and how we act is all truth.
Yeah. And if something happens to you, as Aaron talks about, who can you tell? Because it's not something we're supposed to talk about. So I'm very excited. It's a wonderful interview. I just found her so captivating and interesting, and she has a way of telling her story. She's learned a lot, and she's now telling young people, both boys and girls, about this and kind of helping them through to navigate the process of dealing with sexual activity, sexual behavior, sexual morality in the sense of what's right and wrong, but in being able to express themselves.
And before we get started with this, just a couple of things, because she mentions GRACE, which stands for Godly Response to Abuse in the Christian Environment. So that's a report that came out against Bob Jones University.
Right.
And the other thing I want to mention is that we, and you talked about this earlier, is that we are continuing to do stories on those who went to Christian schools. So if you have a story, give us a call.
We love stories.
We do love stories. Give us a call or email us. And we would love to either talk to you or get a segment from you of what your experience has been. And we will put that on the air.
Yeah. We're going to put together some stories from people who maybe had some experiences in especially some of these very conservative Christian schools. But we really want to hear from you. If you are out there, we have a phone number on our website that you can use. It's also will be in the show notes link. You can send us an email. We just want to hear from you and find out what your experience was in a Christian university, school, or college.
And that phone number, by the way, is 209-294-0681.
Your memory is better than mine.
No, it's on my phone. 209-294-0681, or reach us at podcast@recoveringfromreligion.org.
Yes. And so I'm very excited for today's guest, Erin Birchwell. She not only went to BJU, she grew up as a faculty child. Her parents were on the faculty. So she has a story to tell, and I'm very excited to hear about it. It's a tragic story in so many ways, but her courage and her bravery, she has for many years taught high school and elementary speech, drama, art, and theater. She's a small business owner. She's also the author of children's books. She's a volunteer with many nonprofit and outreach organizations. And one of the things that she likes to do is share her story to let others know that they're not alone in the world of survivors, from those who have survived oppressive religions. So I'm very glad that she's here. And I want to say a personal note to you, Aaron. I want to thank you for your sort of teaching, speech and drama, art and theater. I had a teacher in high school who was our speech and drama teacher, and he had such a huge influence on me. So I will thank him by thanking you.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Bill. And the real challenge was most of those years that I taught, about half of the years, were at very strict fundamental Christian schools. So you can imagine how creative I had to get with what plays we were allowed to do. There were very few plays we were allowed to do because it couldn't have any swear word or any, you know, any kissing, or it really limited it to a lot of Shakespeare and like some Chekhov. So, but thank you. I appreciate that.
Shakespeare, but you couldn't have the guys dressing up as the girls.
That's right. And if you called someone an ass in Shakespearean time, it was okay.
That's right.
You just couldn't say it in modern day. Right. That's right.
So. Yeah, because the King James Bible uses that word.
Right. Oh, yes. Yes. And you couldn't watch violent movies, but then there's the crucifixion of, you know, actual crucifixion description. Right. There's that in the Bible. But, you know, so, yes. Well, thank you for that introduction. I know that what you call bravery and courage, most of the people I grow up with think of me as a traitor because, like, Tim was pointing out, if you, there's no room for middle ground. There is no middle ground. Either you know the truth and you've rejected it, so you're actually worse than an infidel, or you agree with everything they say down to how long your skirt should be, what you can listen to in your own car. I remember when I was teaching at another conservative Christian school here in the Columbus area, that I had to turn the volume down on my radio every time I drove up because I would have been dismissed if they knew I was listening to oldies radio. So that's the kind of stuff we're talking about.
Now your parents taught at Bob Jones, is that correct?
That's correct. They each put in more than 40 years of service there. Wow. So I was born, I wasn't actually born at Barge Memorial, which is the hospital. I'm doing very loose air quotes around hospital on campus. But most of the faculty kids I grew up were actually born on campus and never left. Like they lived on back campus. They did everything on campus. My parents were smart in getting a home off campus because they thought, you know, if the school ever tanks, we don't want to be without a home and jobs. But I went to nursery all the way up because it was mandated. And it's funny at my more recent schools that I've taught at that where the kids have no idea what I'm talking about when I say conservative. I tell them that, you know, I didn't have a choice about where I went to college and they can't wrap their brains around that. And what I tell them is we literally didn't have a choice. If you didn't do nursery so your parents could teach elementary, kindergarten, all the way up, your parents would have lost their job. If I had even applied or looked at another university, even a Christian one, I would have been called in. I actually was called in because I looked at a different school for grad school and I was called in by my dorm supervisor. You know, why would I ever think about going somewhere else? But they said in the faculty handbook at the time that you can't be homeschooled. You can't go anywhere else. You must go there to college. And so for those of us that grew up together, we didn't know anything else. We were all together. And it was get 4 years of free college and have everyone happy or risk your parents' livelihood and their entire life to that point by going somewhere else and then not getting any support from family and being in debt. So most of us just stuck it out.
Were you a compliant child when you were growing up on, it's very restrictive, no movies, no TV, no music. So did you were a compliant child growing up, didn't ask all the wrong questions?
No, I actually didn't. I'm very different now because like the school I have taught at more recently cannot believe that I never questioned rules. Now I'm a different person, but no, I was very compliant. And To top it off, my family, my parents were always more normal than a lot of the other faculty parents that I knew, but they went to a very conservative church. The church was more conservative than Bob Jones that we went to. And my dad was the music pastor. And so technically we were church staff kids. So I remember one time getting turned in, that's what we called it, getting turned in by someone at the church. I was doing gardening in my parents' work when I was 20 years old in my parents' yard, and somebody called the church to complain that I was wearing pants in the front yard. So, yeah, so the church was a lot more, yeah, but no, I just did what I was told. About halfway through college, I started going, now, wait a minute. But I kept it to myself and I just pretty much made it through, because by that point, I had 3 years under my belt of free tuition. My credits wouldn't transfer anywhere, nowhere, not even the local Christian school or the community college. So it was throw all that away or just kind of be really careful and not get caught the last year and stick it out.
When you said your units wouldn't transfer, how was it accredited?
Well, it wasn't. And in fact, Dr. Bob the Third, or Dr. Bob the Turd, as we like to call him, he was very adamant that he would not have any state tell him how to run his school. So, accreditation was a taboo word. And they always love to give us the propaganda that, Harvard's not accredited, or Yale, I don't remember which one they used, but they would always say, you don't need an accredited degree. It won't affect your grad school. We have doctors and lawyers which is true, but in a lot of states, it's very difficult, because I think that they started the accreditation process maybe back in 2012 or 13. But again, I'm not sure how great of an accreditation it is now. It's called SACS. I just don't know much about it. But so we all had unaccredited degrees, which meant if you didn't get your South Carolina educational license in South Carolina, then you could literally never teach out of state again without starting college over. And I have a friend that's in that position right now. She has to go back to college because she has an education degree from Bob Jones, but Ohio won't recognize it.
Right. Yeah, that's a problem. I have a friend as well who is that she did go to Christian school. It was accredited, but it's a degree in Bible. And now she's stuck in a Christian school, a private Christian school, and she can't really go anywhere. She's very limited. She doesn't have a California credential to teach. So she's very limited in what she can do.
Well, as far as I know, they still have this major, or recently they cut it out. If they did, they have a camp ministries major. So you can go to college for 4 years with a camp ministries degree.
Wow.
So
I always felt, because in college and seminary, my concentration was in biblical languages, Greek and Hebrew, which is just not very helpful in the real world. If I had stayed in the ministry my ultimate goal was to teach college or seminary, but a degree in camp counseling tops that.
Right. I'll tell you, the people I know with that degree are selling cars.
yeah. That makes sense.
I read accounts when I was studying, looking at just different articles and stories about Bob Jones. I read a student account that talked about while they were on campus, they kind of found their tribe. They would meet secretly to listen to music or talk about TV shows. I read an article that one former student joked about his group sitting around studying the New American Standard Version. Did you know of any of these secret subversives on campus?
Oh, yes. I guess it's time for a confession. Might as well do it now.
Wait a minute. Let me get my collar on.
That's right. One of the very big no-nos is skipping chapel or skipping Bible conference. So they don't have spring break. They have Bible conference where you go to 4 services a day and you're not allowed to study during them or anything. You have to only have a Bible. And skipping those were basically you would get shipped or kicked out if you were caught. And I think my senior year, maybe my junior and senior year, there was a group of us that would just go out of town about an hour. And somebody had a boat on the lake. And we spent all of Bible conference every year out on the boat on the lake skipping, because they didn't take attendance. See, for chapel, you have to sit in an assigned seat and you have a row monitor. So they monitor everything. But the loose groups like you're talking about, I think they're more prevalent now because of social media. We didn't have Facebook when I was in college. I graduated in December of 2000, but technically 01. And Facebook was not around. Social media groups were not around. People didn't even really have cell phones yet. So it was harder to find a group like that. And it was, it was probably not as risky because of social media, but I know now that the kids do a lot of those things. And I don't know if they're turning a blind eye or they're just sneakier, or maybe so many are doing it they can't catch it. But I know that not every kid there is, you know, not watching movies.
Yeah. And I know that the student handbook indicates that on campus internet is severely restricted.
Yes, severely. And when I was in school, my best friend emailed me this very funny, it's not a meme, but it's a little short video of this. It's still around. It's this alien dancing to I Will Survive, and then a disco ball falls and smashes her. And she sent me that little clip, and I believe she got 50 demerits for that. And you can only get 150 before you're shipped, because she forwarded something that had rock music in it.
Okay.
And we're adults here. So we were 20 years old when that happened. So
with all of these restrictions, my experience in education tells me that there's a lot of shit going on behind the scenes. So what you've got stories.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
What was
for
going
sure.
on behind the scenes?
Well, you know, I honestly didn't take part in a lot until the very end of college, but there were a lot of sexual things going on for sure. I remember being shocked when I was student teaching off campus that the coach there said to me, oh, so you're a Bob Jones girl. So basically, do you want to get it on? And I said, no, I'm from Bob Jones. And he told me, he said, oh, those girls on campus that come here and student teach, they're the horniest girls ever. So, and I was shocked by that, but I guess I really shouldn't have been, given what happened to me. But when you tell people they can't have any kind of sexual, there was called a 6-inch rule. It was a 6-inch rule, and you couldn't even get within 6 inches of someone. And so when you take all that away, they find an outlet somehow to do it. So, and when it's sneakier, it's not as good, because there's no accountability there at all. And you can't say if someone, in my instance, the guy who molested me for a period of about a year and a half over and over again, I couldn't tell anyone, because I shouldn't have been off campus alone with him, because that was a big no-no. And two, I quote, let it happen. So I would be in as much trouble as he would be. I didn't want to tell anyone, but, there was another story, and I'm blanking on it right now, but, there was a lot of that kind of stuff. Oh, there was actually a lot of, from my understanding, a lot of homosexual activity, because, you know, you're not allowed to be around girls at all. And the boys' dorms, I know that there was a boy who got raped when I was there, and the school got very upset that he called the real police and not the campus police. Very upset, because they did not, at that time, they did not like their dirty laundry being aired anywhere.
Right.
So, I mean, I have a lot of friends who are gay now. I'm very happy, I might add. But it, you know, a lot, they, I guess a lot of that was going on as well. I'm not so much on the girl's side, but some.
I have to say, so my daughters went to private Christian school as well. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I think it was around the time we decided to pull them. And so I'm talking to one of the parents, and he said, so-and-so's daughter got pregnant in the bathroom of the school. And I said, she got pregnant in the bathroom of a private Christian school. I said, yeah. I said, my daughter's going to get pregnant for free in public school.
Right.
You know, and the whole point was that it goes on. And we think if we slap a Christian label on it, that it's not going to happen anymore, you know?
Right.
I know I have several friends who are graduates of Bob Jones who are gay. And there's an alumni association of former Bob Jones students, gay and lesbian. And it's called BJ Unity. And I have several friends who are active in that. And they we know it did happen, because they didn't suddenly become gay after they got their degree.
Right. No, and that BG Unity's done a whole lot for grads who are now gay. And in fact, there was a girl just very recently whose parents are on staff. They lived on campus. When she came out online to say that she was gay, they kicked her out of the house. She was a minor, and she had no home. She was on the streets. And BJ Unity helped her out because, you know, because it was shameful, I guess, for her living on campus with her parents. And that was like just months ago. So it's still going on.
Well, I knew they were, it was a pretty big organization because I've read a post from this friend of mine who is actively involved in it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And what's so weird about Bob Jones, we used to call it the mothership because all these churches out that we would call independent fundamentalist Bible churches, they are all connected back to Bob Jones, and they're the feeder schools. They're the people who pressure kids in the youth group to go there, and they get them scholarships to go there, but they won't help them at all if they go to state college. But as soon as Bob Jones changes a rule, magically all these other churches change the same rule. But it's Bob Jones always has to do it first. And Movies was a big one. They made a rule that if you went to a movie at least, I think, 30 miles outside of the center of Greenville, then it was okay to go to a movie. So all these people would just drive on the weekends to go to movies, including my own father, because it was okay. And when he would come to Ohio, he was dying to see stuff because he was in Ohio. So he wasn't breaking the rules in Ohio. But then magically all these other churches changed. You know, when people wore pants to church on a Sunday night, still not a Sunday morning, you know, that was a horrific thing. And then all of a sudden, when Bob Jones made it okay after 5 p.m. for women to wear pants, then suddenly it was okay all over the country with these other churches. So they're like, they set the bar for sure for everyone else.
You know, in my little church, the Pentecostal church in Salinas, California, my mother got in trouble because she made pants, which she wore to work because it was cold. And so she went from work to home. Somebody from the church stopped by and saw her, immediately reported that to our pastor. And then my pastor called my father in and said, "What are you doing? Why are you allowing your wife to wear pants?" And my father fortunately said to him, "You know, if you look at that same scripture in the Bible, it says that there's a requirement to have a fence built around the top of the roof in your house. Do you have that?"
Right.
And the pastor went silent.
Yeah, right.
So I grew up in a similar situation where it was very dogmatic and all the ideologies and all those things. But we also, and maybe it was because of my dad, but, you know, we did have a level of being able to think for ourselves and at least being able to look at the scriptures differently and having some kind of a discussion. I mean, we're still in the box. But you're growing up in an environment with your parents who are also a little bit more normal than other people. What influence did it have on you when they're now going across the state line or wherever they're going and watching movies and then coming back home?
Well, that didn't happen until I was long after I graduated. I think I had a child by the time. But when we first got married, we didn't tell either of our parents that we went to movies. Still, we were still in a church up in Columbus that was very fundamental. And so it probably was in our church constitution. I don't know. My eyes were just opened after what I experienced and the hypocrisy. The guy who took advantage of me for all those times was what they call a preacher boy in grad school. And I was 18. I was a freshman. He was very well respected on campus, and I had to, you know, hear him preach and pray and sing in chapel for all the years after I had come forward and said, "This is what happened." When I was being interviewed, and it's funny, this kind of fits in with the no pants thing. It's a lot of times, at least when I was there, it's the woman's fault if something happens to her. You know, you let your guard down, or you were wearing something immodest. And in fact, when I got grilled, when stuff, you know, came out about what happened to me, they sat me down in front of my parents. I was, you know, 20 years old by that time, and made me say what happened. And then the very first thing that the dean of students said to me was, "Now, what were you wearing when this happened? Was it low, or you don't understand how a boy's," and I was in all the code. So it was high. It was nothing I was wearing. I mean, I was in a gunny sack basically. It's, you know, that pants thing, you know, if you had been molested, it was because you're wearing pants. It's not because a guy who's a preacher boy made a mistake, basically. So my eyes were opened at the end of college, and I knew I didn't want it. But like a lot of grads, once you get off campus, the rules don't seem, the little things like not drinking, they don't seem as big when you're a grad because it's not Bob Jones, you know, you're not on campus. So you think, you naively think, well, I can fix this church. I can show them, you know, but you can't. They take all their orders from Bob Jones. And we thought we could fix, you know, the local church here. And that was very far from being true.
We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back and talk about your personal story.
I'm Gail Jordan, Executive Director of Recovering from Religion. Thank you for listening to our podcast. Recovering from Religion is an online community for those who have questions or doubts about their faith. We're not here to talk you out of or into faith. We just provide a safe place to examine what you believe and perhaps why you believe it. We have staff who can take your calls and chats, and we can help connect you with an evidence-based therapist in your area. On our website, you'll find an extensive database of resources, as well as where to find local support groups in many communities. We want to help you resolve issues around your faith. Recovering from Religion is an entirely volunteer-run organization. If you're interested in being a volunteer, please visit recoveringfromreligion.org and look for the Volunteer tab. Also, we invite you to support us with a monthly or one-time donation. All contributions go directly to fund Recovering from Religion programs and outreach efforts. On our website, click on the Donate button for instruction.
Many of us are recovering from religion know that changes to our beliefs about God create doubt and uncertainty. We too have found ourselves without a community and lacking guidance. With this in mind, we've developed the Recovering from Religion Fall Excursion. We will be debuting this event in the tranquil mountains of North Carolina, where the stars are bright and the air is clear and fresh. Join us for workshops on embracing healthy sexuality, leaving fears of hell behind, yoga, a guided hike from our very own Dr. Daryl Ray, stargazing, wine and cider tasting, campfires, music, great food, and of course, great company. The on-site lodges are comfortable and modern, and our registration includes all meals and activities. Tickets and lodging are limited, so register early at recoveringfromreligion.org for our first ever fall excursion, September 20th through the 22nd. Free from judgment and free from dogma, rediscover yourself.
Aaron, you mentioned before the break, you were talking about some of the things that happened to you with a grad student. And one of the things that I read about you that made me want you to come and tell your story, you made national media when you and several other women brought charges against Bob Jones.
Yes, not essentially legal charges, okay. But there is an organization called GRACE.
GRACE, yes.
The acronym is Godly Response to Abuse in Christian... it's not education. Right. I can't remember the last word. But anyways, they go in and they're lawyers and they're former social workers and they're pastors and a lot of them are abuse survivors themselves. And they go into organizations like mission boards and Christian schools and they ask for anyone who's associated there that has a story of sexual abuse to come forward anonymously and interview. And what happened to me, just in brief summary to let you know of how I got into the national media, was that my parents took a ministry team every summer all across Eastern Europe. And so I think that's also what helped in our upbringing was we actually went to other countries and saw all kinds of different lifestyles. Christians over there are actually very conservative too, but that's a whole nother discussion. But this guy who was much older than me was basically grooming me as a close friend when I was in high school. And he was smart enough that he never did anything physically until I hit my freshman year. And then anytime I was with him, he would pressure me or force me into doing things I did not want to do. I would even tell him at times to stop. He would apologize and come back. And see, by that point, being raised like I was, I thought, well, I'm damaged goods now. No one is going to want me. And he says he, you know, loves me. So I continued to go back. He would apologize and I'd give him another chance. And I was holding out for him because, you know, I didn't think anyone else would have me if they had known, you know, the things he had done. And so one day I showed up in the dining common and he was with a girl that had an engagement ring on her hand. And I immediately thought, wow, I was so dumb. I mean, I was just a piece of meat to him. So I didn't say anything because his dad wanted him to be a local pastor. That was his biggest goal for his son. And so he actually threatened my parents. There were several anonymous threatening notes saying, there was one of with my head cut out of my photo of my head hanging on gallows that if you, you know, Haman hung his, made his own gallows. And if you talk, you know, and they told my parents, they would sue them for slander if I said anything because they didn't want anything to get in the way of their son, being a big pastor. And he is, popular. I wouldn't say big pastor. His church is not that big, but he's a popular grad pastor in Greenville now. My eyes were open. And then during the whole process being accused, and then it was like I was wearing the scarlet letter A the rest of the time. I didn't get approved for drama roles. I didn't get approved for, you know, offices in my society. It was like nothing. I was marked as a bad person. And so being forced to not speak about something. In fact, my church even got all of us together one night. We met at midnight at the church because his family didn't want anyone to see what was going on. So we met at midnight and basically the church made up a document that said, we're going to agree to disagree and we're never going to discuss this again. And they made me sign it and they made him sign it and they made both our parents sign it. And it was a big ordeal. So I graduated and was like, I can never talk about this again. I didn't know enough about lawsuits or slander, so I didn't talk about it for a long time. Well, then the school hired Grace and they put out a statement on their own Bob Jones webpage saying, if you have a story, come forward. So it was don't talk. Oh, come forward. So a lot of people I know that were, I even know one girl who was raped on campus and she got kicked out. The boy, who was a preacher boy, was put on spiritual probation, but allowed to come back. She would not interview with Grace because she didn't trust anything or any organization that Bob Jones would have hired. And I went through a little of that myself. Like, well, why now are they wanting us to talk? And that is the big question with grads and Grace. Why? Why did they open up that can of worms? Did they really not know all the stories of things that went on, or were they trying to prove people in chat rooms wrong? People who were taking, nobody really knows why Stephen Jones did it. Was he doing it to get back at his dad? Because there was some, you know, rumor of, you know, a hostile relationship there. Nobody knows why they opened themselves up for Grace. So I found myself as a married adult in my 30s, sitting in a room in front of some lawyers and pastors and people saying, we believe you, tell us your story. And it was like opening up the floodgates because that was the first time I'd ever really talked about it in detail, all in one sitting with anyone besides, you know, my husband and my family. So it was very cathartic, but it was really painful too, because it was like pulling out a really deep splinter. Shortly after that, we left fundamentalism just because it was, you know, we had seen all the issues now, and we'd seen the cover up and the lies, and it just wasn't going to work anymore.
Can I ask, yes. When you say when we left fundamentalism, is that your parents or are you as a, okay.
I'm sorry.
I'm just curious.
Yes, it's my husband and I, and we had a young daughter at the time, and my mother-in-law. My parents are still in South Carolina, but my mother-in-law left. Yes.
Okay.
And I might add, when we left the church in Ohio here, we got, essentially shunned. No one would speak to us. I still, to this day, that was 7 years ago, I still see people from that church in the grocery, and they will see me turn around and literally like run the other way when they see us. So, so I interviewed with Grace. And so a bunch of people did that. And then, so Grace was hired in 2013. And then in January of 2014, it was finally coming to an end. It was supposed to be less than a year's progress. And we were all waiting, what's going to happen? What's going to be revealed? Is it nothing? Is it something? And then in January of 2014, days before the report was supposed to be published, Bob Jones terminated the contract with Grace. And so here, a lot of us went through this gut-wrenching process to only to be told, okay, well, it will never see the light of day and you can't see it either. Like, so what was all that for? And so that's when I decided to speak out to the news. And I know that certain family members of mine at the time were still employed there and they begged me to not go on the news. But I remember telling my family at the time, you know what? I need to go on the news because I'm a face that people recognize on campus because my parents have been there so long. And I want people to see that it's not just nasty people on the internet who are out to get Bob Jones. It's people's kids that you know, your colleagues' kids experienced this. You know me. I have nothing to gain by coming out and saying this. I only have more reputation in your circles to lose. So I talked to the local news, and then somehow the New York Times picked up that story, and I talked with them, and then I talked with Al Jazeera, I think it's called, and they did a big story, and so it kind of hit the national media then. And so, yeah, several of us just said, you know what, we're not taking this line down. We're going to tell people what happened. If you're not going to publish the report, then we're going to break our anonymity and come out and say, this is what happened. So then 1 month later, the university, because it was all over the news, and it didn't look good for them. And then 1 month later, they reinstated Grace with the same contract. So nothing changed. So basically, they gave in to peer pressure, which is something that they teach against. And then in December of 2014, the Grace report was published. So that's, in a nutshell, how the national media came down on the university recently.
Okay. That's quite a nutshell. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's back up for a minute. One burning question I had as a dad was, what was going through your parents' mind, your dad's mind? Where were they in this process?
So they did not know while it was happening. After he got engaged and I realized I had been played the fool, I stopped eating and I was losing weight and I was sick a lot. And my mom is the one that said what happened. And I finally told them. They actually were friends with Dr. Bob III and his wife. And so they went to Dr. Bob III and he said, well, what do you want me to do to this guy? Cause you know, I don't want him here. I don't think it's right. And my parents were still very much, well, they cared about their jobs and they were still very much enamored by who Dr. Bob was. And they thought he was this great person. And so they said essentially to him, well, we're not going to tell you what to do, but we do think something should be done. So he handed it back over to the dean of students. And see, the guy that did all this to me worked for the dean of students. He was what's called a dorm counselor. So I didn't have a chance because they, you know, they asked for his side of the story before I ever got in there. So
wait, did they listen to your side of the story first?
They
or
did.
He just heard from your parents?
They heard from my parents. They then went to the guy. Then okay. They allowed me to come with a written statement and read it in front of my parents, which was humiliating. But yeah. But so my parents believed me all along. They felt like their hands were tied. They know now that was wrong, and I think they were just worried about their jobs. I think they were worried some about their reputation. My dad was actually fired after 42 years, the year that I spoke to Grace and the news. So, and then my mom was fired a couple years later. So, I know that that had some direct bearing on my dad eventually. So I think that, well, they're sorry for the way we were raised. They know it wasn't right now, but they were very much fooled. Not that that gives them a pass, but I think a lot of the faculty that are my parents' age, my dad's 79, they believed when they first started there 50 years ago, 45 years ago, that they were doing a good thing and that there was no wholesome place for kids to go because that's when college campuses were wild and drugs. And they thought they were giving a wholesome but quality education to kids. And it was some part of some bigger mission. So I don't know exactly what was going through their minds, but that would be my guess.
How did you feel about that?
Well, I actually was just glad that they believed me in the first place, because I have friends who've told their parents even worse things than happened to me, and their parents did not believe them. So I, you know, at the time, I felt lucky that they believed me at all. We really were scared by the lawsuit and the threatening letters. And we know, I know now that slander is the hardest suit to win in court. But I did, when we didn't know anything about that back then, because we'd never been, you know, threatened with a lawsuit before. So.
Did you have any expectation of your dad to do something, to say something, to go after the guy? What was your thought process on that?
I didn't, because, you know, our parents, you know how they teach that you always obey leadership and you don't question leadership. So my parents were following the school's decision to just, they removed the guy from dorm counselor and they put him in the library, but they lied to all the dorm kids and said, well, he's getting married, so he's just going to the library. But, so I guess my parents were just follow. I mean, I'd always known them to follow their authority, and that's just what they were doing. So I don't really think I had at that time any expectation of my dad doing anything.
Has that changed?
Yes. Yes. It has changed now. Again, though, the circumstance, you know, the circumstances were so wild back then. I don't harbor any bitterness toward my parents, because I hope that I wouldn't do that as a parent, but I just don't know.
People who have not been in that, the fundamentalist environment or any kind of restrictive, oppressive religious culture don't understand that such thinking processes, that's how they work. And right. It's easy to look back and say, you should have done this, or why didn't you know better? But right. the reality is, that's how people think. It's right. just kind of, I don't want to say hardwired, but it is wired in.
It is. Yeah, it is. It's very much so. And, you know, here's another fun fact about faculty life there was, and this just shows the extent of really brainwashing is what I call it now. But my dad has two masters and a doctorate from other universities, not from Bob Jones, but actual University of Miami and Cincinnati is one of them. And teaching college 30 years. With those degrees, he was making less than $20,000 a year in the year 2000.
Wow.
So, I mean, but here's another fun fact. They, and this is honestly part of something I'd like to do something about in the future, like set up a savings or a fund. But there was this thing called the promise with the faculty. And it was based on the verse of scripture that says, forsake me not when I'm old. And it was also called the forsake me not fund. And they told all the staff, the faculty, if you will just work here and give up, you know, worldly sacrifices because we can't pay you much because this is a ministry, then we will take care of you, basically give you a retirement that will include meals, housing, and medical. And they promised them that. And they, the stipulation was that they could not work any extra jobs. So that would even mean like selling Tupperware or nothing. They could not work other jobs. Because they were going to provide for them. Well, in 2004-ish, the fund dried up. And so they just said, well, there's no promise anymore. So my parents worked for all those years at, you know, 20,000 or less. And then suddenly that's what their social security is based on. And it's a bad predicament for everyone who was, wow. who was promised, you know, retirement.
Yeah. I want to go back to something you said earlier. When this first began to come out, you were called in. Everybody had to sign essentially a confidentiality statement.
Yes.
Nobody will ever talk about this again.
Right.
And I want to know, and I don't mean to pry, but how do you emotionally deal with that? Knowing what happened, but you're forced to, and you're taught to keep quiet about it. What does that do to you emotionally?
Oh, it's terrible. I see counselors and doctors now, and I'm in a much healthier place than I've ever been. But my one counselor has told me that, you know, part of the way my brain is now permanently wired is because of how we were treated by the school growing up and the church. And I should add that our church is the one that did this big confidentiality thing. It was under direction of the school, but it was the church that did it. But I still have a copy. I can send it to you guys if you want to see it. I have a copy of the thing I signed, and everyone's signatures are on there. The pastor, everyone signed it. And I have actually emailed that photo to several people who've outright attacked me online or said I'm lying still. And I've sent them this thing and say, well, how does his signature and his parents and my pastor's and my, how do all these signatures come on a document if nothing happened? But see, again, after I came out to Grace, the year after Grace was out, there was a graduate who was a friend of the guy that molested me. And he went after me. He started calling friends of mine from college and saying, I think she's lying and I'm willing to testify in court. And he was gathering evidence against me. And that was, 20 years later or 15 years later. So, it makes you afraid. When something bad happens, I still have to stop the thought process of, oh, I deserve this, or right, I shouldn't right. tell anyone, because that is it's ingrained in you. That it's your fault somehow, or if something bad happens, that you're being punished somehow.
Is this common with the other women that you have, that you now know were involved in this at the same time?
Yes. Yeah. It's funny because several people that I grew up with still have connections to Bob Jones, which I don't understand at all. But they're coming from the camp of, well, it's not as bad as it used to be. The girls can wear pants now, but they're still as judgmental and, horribly mean to graduates. That hasn't changed, but they think, well, it's not as bad as we were there. And so they still have ties to the school. But interestingly enough, all the people I can think of off the top of my head that are still tied to the school, faculty, kids, I don't know that any of them ever were sexually molested. So it's interesting because our class tended to go either far to the left or stay in far on the right, and not a lot of in between.
Erin, where are you right now with your faith?
It's a process for me. I do have a very loving pastor who's helped me. He's been so patient and helped me with everything, because I had told my husband, Jason, I said, I am never going back to a church ever. You will never see me in a church sanctuary again. I've said that more than once over the past few years. But my pastor he never pressured me. We attended there on and off forever before we joined. That was another weird thing about joining a church. It was, you were living basically on the edge if you weren't immediately joined to a church after you've left another one. So we were living on the edge for years, but I had a very patient pastor and a counseling, but I will tell you, I have gone through a lot of doubt that, is there even a God? Why would a God allow this to happen? Why is God still allowing them to function? Why are their doors still open? And it's there's a tough questions that I'm now okay that I don't have answers to, but I wasn't for a very long time. But if I hadn't had a very kind pastor, who is also a BJ grad, I might add, but he separated long time ago from, he's not at all in that ballpark, but and he believed me, and he believed my story, which no one else in leadership had ever believed me before. If I hadn't had him, I really don't know where I would be right now. Religiously.
How would you say all of that experience has impacted your relationship with your husband, with your children, with your family? Where are you now with relationships?
I'm fortunate in that I have the world's most patient husband. So I tell people, he's an accountant and I'm an artist, and it's a very interesting relationship.
I have that same relationship.
The same thing to your husband.
I do. My husband works in accounting, and I'm a writer. So
that's right. Yeah.
So I would only challenge that I have the world's best husband and most patient husband. So
that's right.
So we can hold a contest on that.
Well, Bill, maybe our husbands will live together in heaven and we'll be down a level or two.
Absolutely.
On another street, we'll be in the hood. Yeah.
You'll be drawing, I'll be writing. We'll stay together.
We'll be in the hood of heaven. Yeah. So, well, I tell people now, like, I drive him nuts, but he's great. That's what I say. So,
yeah.
So no, he's so patient. He's been the one to bring up very patiently and very carefully bring up all these questions like, well, was it right that your parents did that? No, it wasn't. Was it, you know, and a lot of helped me come to terms with a lot of things that I don't know how long it would have taken me to get there on my own. He was very supportive when we left. We left the church locally here for the last time in Columbus. It was because the pastor, the Bob Jones grad who came up to take over our church, this just shows you how closely connected all these circles are. The pastor that came up was literally best friends with the guy, pastor who molested me all those years ago. So when he took over our church, I was like, oh, hell no, this is not going to work. Like, there's no way. And sure enough, they wound up, his wife wound up confronting me and the pastor confronted Jason and saying that I was a liar and their friend would never do that, you know? So we were essentially kind of forced out of fundamentalism, but I'm so glad now. It was really painful at the time because everyone we knew completely wrote us off in one stroke. But if we hadn't had the Band-Aid ripped off like that, I know that we would have gotten out of it, but I don't know how long or how much damage would have been done to my daughter. She was only 2.5 when we left at the time. And it's funny, it just as a side note, something else that I've been able to give my testimony a lot at the school that I was at after all this. It was always considered a very liberal Christian school in my previous circles. But I've been able to give my testimony a lot. And I tell girls, you know, it's not your fault if something like this happens, and guys in turn, you know, the same thing could happen to you. And college is a wild place, but you've got to speak up. And if you didn't, you don't speak up then, it's okay. But it doesn't mean you can't speak up later. And both guys and girls, it's not enough, to just think that it's okay to touch someone. Like you almost have to ask nowadays because, you know, the flip side of that could be true. But, anyways, the part of what helped get me out, there were these key moments of things that happened in our church. Obviously, being called a liar was a big one. But before that, my daughter was a baby, and she was in the nursery at church, and she was only probably 5 months old. She had real chubby legs, and I signed her in. It was these two older women, very old school, hardcore older women, and they put her in a swing and it was very old. It's like not up to code. The swing was probably from the 60s and they closed the lid and she let out one of those, like where they're silent before the scream, like this scream of pain because she didn't do that normally. And so I instinctively opened the door and went to go get her. And this lady stopped me and said, she's throwing a tantrum. She needs to just have it out. And I said, no, no, she doesn't do that. I said, there's something wrong. And she stopped me with her hands. And she said, no, she goes, all babies throw tantrums. If you go pick her up, you're going to teach her that she gets what she wants by screaming. And at that very moment, I told my students, it was like almost like having a devil and an angel on one shoulder. Like I knew there was something wrong. Like I knew I had to get her out. But there are these two ladies who are my elders, and you're supposed to listen to your elders, and they've raised more kids than I have. And I mean, by God's grace, I pushed through her and went and got her out. And sure enough, the tray was just pinching, her leg was white. She was just pinching her. But I sat during the service that Sunday and I literally like shook and I told Jason, what would have happened if I had walked away? Like, well, how long would that have happened? But that's how young they start training you, that your opinion doesn't matter. I mean, you're 5 months old and they want you to know or learn a lesson. You know, that's how young it starts.
Aaron, you've got to be furious with your experiences. You sound very kind and gentle, but what's underneath all of that?
Well, I have not always been kind and gentle. I was very angry right after a lot of this started and very hurt. And I was depressed and I had postpartum. And, so I was not always very gracious online and in the emails I sent to people. I mean, I was never abusive or anything, but I was very direct. So I've had my share of anger years. But, you know, the older you get, you do see things start to come around. You know, like, for instance, Bob Jones's enrollment is so low that they're not going to make it that much longer. I wanted it to happen right then when I was angry. I wanted their doors to close, you know, and I had a goal set out, and that's not the way life works. And I've come to terms with that now. And I also just know if I live my life the way I'm supposed to be living and I help other people, and I can tame my own emotions that aren't healthy, then I get less and less angry the more, you know, farther I removed and knowing that it's coming around. They will get what's coming, you know, eventually, even if it's not in this lifetime. And I'm okay with that now.
So it's been a process for you to deal with the anger and the anger, denial, guilt, shame, all of those things that you've had to work through.
It's been about a 10-year process, I'd say.
What would you say was the biggest help for you in working through those emotions?
Well, honestly, meeting other people that could validate what I felt. Like when I was speaking out in the news with Grace, I only knew like maybe two people that had a shared experience with me at that time. Then suddenly all these people say, "You're not crazy. This happened to you too. It wasn't you. It's that place." And so a lot of these online groups, you know, of survivors and groups like BG Unity and other groups, it's very helpful to know that you're not alone and that it's not you. It's not your fault, you know, and it's okay to speak out, because for so long I didn't speak out because I was afraid to.
If you knew of a woman, or if I know of a woman who is keeping a secret like this, what would you tell them?
Well, you have to be so careful. I mean, I'm not a counselor, and you know, I don't have any medical degrees. I do know a girl, the girl I referenced earlier, who was raped on campus, and she was kicked out, not her boyfriend. She's still very much afraid to come forward, and you know, my sister knows her a little better, but I've let girls at my other school know by giving my testimony. If you ever need help, you can come to me. I'll walk with you. And I've done that before with girls that I've taught. They have found me after I've given my testimony, and I have gone with them to their parents to tell them some very difficult things. And so I make myself available, but I don't ever push them in one direction or the other, because they may not be ready. And you know, pushing in one way or the other, I feel like could possibly do more damage if they're not ready for that.
Right. Makes sense.
In your experience, you know that this type of behavior continues to happen in schools all across the country, particularly Christian schools where there's so much secrecy. What do you feel the solution to that should be?
Well, I do. I mean, I'm not sure about a long-term massive solution, but I do know that the more people that come forward and share their stories, that's what gives people the courage to come forward themselves. That's what gave me the courage. And, that's what's given some of my students the courage. And in turn, then they give other people courage, because, you know, a lot of girls will confide in someone. And so the more people who've shared their stories, then there's just that many more people for people to go to for support. I don't know long-term. I don't really know. It's a growing problem in public and Christian schools. So right. I don't know. It's a really hard, it's a hard problem.
I do think that what you're saying, that as people share their story, even with one other person who then shares with another, it builds a coalition and a collective of support. And more people learn, and it can ultimately change the environment and the culture around us.
It can. And I just heard from a girl a few months ago. When I came out and gave my story, I just assumed everyone hated me and was never going to speak to me again, which was, you know, a fair assumption for a lot of those people. But this one girl who's now my friend through a shared group, she gave me a message the other day and said, "I just want you to know, I think you're a rock star. When you talk to the news, it gave me courage to tell and I had no idea. And so when you put it out there, when you cast a broad net, you know, you don't know who it's going to hit. But it's, I think it's also important that girls thank a person who has talked, because there's something very, very confirming to know that, well, I wasn't just talking to hear myself talk. And those people can think I'm bad. I don't care, because this person was helped by that. So,
yeah, I want to add a couple of things to that. One is, when we do share our stories, you know, the story doesn't have to be complete. It's just an experience in life that we're going through. And there's so much healing in that. There's so much grace when we talk to somebody else and we find so many other people that have had the same or similar experiences to whom we can relate. And that's when the shame dissipates. There's no place for shame to live in that.
Right.
The second thing I was going to say is that patriarchy is in our culture, right? Whether it comes from Christianity or another religion, or just because it is that we've accepted patriarchy as the way that things are. I watch my own daughters in high school, where one of my daughters told the story of they have a dress code in their campus. And so I guess it was a teacher or somebody that came in the room, and she said, all the girls stand up. And then she would get them for dress code. And she said, they didn't do that to the guys. The guys,
oh, no.
The guys can wear whatever they want and they still get away with it.
Right.
And you're right. You have to talk. I mean, we're in a society, I think now it's kind of breaking a little bit because of the Me Too movement and the church Me Too movement, but you got to talk, you got to find help. You've got to find resources. You've got to get your story out there. And I think that's what's really going to make a change.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And Recovering from Religion has the secular therapist program. If you feel like you want somebody to talk to, go to the Recovering from Religion website and find the link there. There are therapists who will talk to you and not try to make you believe something. They will listen to you and be available to you. So that's a good resource.
Yeah. And your podcast, I found you guys by just typing in, over a year ago, by typing in surviving fundamentalism, I think was what I typed in, and yours popped up right away. And so I've listened to several of your podcasts, and all of that is so helpful. I mean, and you know, with a podcast too, it's out there for forever essentially. And, it can help. Yeah. It can help people. And it has, for sure.
Good. Good. Thank you so much. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Erin, tell everybody about your books. You've written two children's books.
Oh, yes. I have, I'm writing and illustrating. This one will come out. It should hit stores in November 1st of this year. Mm-hmm. It's called Pip's Path Through Lancaster, Ohio. And it's about a squirrel named Pip and a fox named Pepper. And they visit all the historical sites in Lancaster, Ohio. And what's exciting about it is the entire city of Lancaster came together to make this book, and it's been funded through grant money and through foundation money. And so they're all really invested in it, so much so that the character follows a map around the city to these historical places and parks. And then anywhere there's a star indicated on the map, there's actually a special prize for kids at all those locations. So they can take their book and they can go get prizes by seeing these great, you know, historical places in Lancaster. So it's exciting. The press and we don't know of any other book that's been done quite this way through grant money. So Lancaster hopes to be a model city for other cities to do this, cities who want more tourism and to bring in, you know, more visitors. So it's exciting. The other two books I've illustrated, one's called Packard Takes Flight and the other one's Harriet's Homecoming. And one is about Columbus, Ohio, and one is about Cincinnati, Ohio. So a lot of Ohio going on.
I love that. That's fantastic. Where can people find you if they wanted to reach out to you?
I can give you my email and I can give you my Instagram account. So it's Erin, E-R-I-N, at Bloomshop, B as in boy, LOOMSHOPPE.com. And then look for the Instagram handle, The Bloom Shop, all one word, THEB as in boy, LOOMSHOPPE. It's a public account.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Erin, for being a part of the show. I have to say, this was a fascinating story to listen to, and heart-wrenching, and all of those emotions that I felt as you were telling your story. And I really wish you well. I'm really glad to hear that you're doing well, that you seem to be happy with your husband and your family. And I love those stories.
Yes.
Thank you. Well, thanks for having me.
Thank you for your courage. I agree with the person who told you earlier you're a rock star. I think you are a rock star.
Agreed.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Recovering from Religion podcast. If you have questions for either of us or suggestions for future topics, you can email us at podcast@recoveringfromreligion.org. If you think you'd like to be one of our guests, we have a form on the podcast page of the Recovering from Religion website. We'd love to hear from you.